Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You are listening to
Fomet About It,
airing live every Monday at 7 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you miss a live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. My name is John LaPola, and tonight we have an awesome, awesome show all about spicing your homebrew and other flavors. But I have a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, if you're not a member of heritageradio.org, please become one. They have great programs like Ferment About It and Beer Sessions, so you should become a member. And I just wanted to say thanks to Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, for hosting us. They have great food and a great tap list, really, really cool stuff. As I said, my name is John LaPola, and I am owner of Bitter and Esters. It's a homebrew shop over on 700 Washington Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, along with my good friend and business partner, Douglas Amport. We've been there since 2011, and we are a full-service homebrew supply shop. We also have beginning and advanced homebrew classes, and we are New York State's only brew on premises where you can come and brew beer at the store. Go to bitterandesters.com for more information. I'm going to plug the hell out of my store all night. Chris Kuzme and Mary, is that are recovering from being at the Great American Beer Festival, which I don't blame them, and they will be doing a wrap-up show next Monday. I am hosting every first Monday, just to give them a break, because they are such hardworking people. And I will be featuring local homebrewers and talking about their techniques and challenges they have as homebrewers and just getting some stories, because I know there's a lot of homebrewers out there brewing beer, and you would love to hear this, I hope. Anyway, before we start tonight's show, which is going to be about spicing your homebrew and adding different flavors, I have a few announcements. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening this October in Brooklyn and in New York City. It's a great time of year. I love autumn. Autumn's just so good, and it's a lot of people's favorite time of year. So we have some really cool stuff. On Sunday, October 12th, our friends at Brooklyn Homebrew are hosting Brooklyn Wart. It's a homebrew competition at the Threes Brewery, 333 Douglas Street in Brooklyn. I think this is the fifth year for Brooklyn Wart, and it's an awesome homebrew contest. It's really fun. We try to go every time we can. It's a chance to taste 30 homebrews, get a plate of food, and help vote for your favorite home brewers. It's over $1,000 in prize money up for grabs. So tickets are $45 and available at brooklynwart.com, and you'll get $10 off with the code BWBREWER2014, BWBREWER2014. So get your tickets and enjoy Brooklyn Wart. And I just personally would like to say congratulations to Brooklyn Homebrew on their recent move to 20th Street in Brooklyn. It's really nice, and I can't wait to get there and check it out. It's really cool for them. And Bitter and Esters would like to also say congratulations on them celebrating their five-year anniversary, because as a homebrew shop and a small business owner, we know how much work that takes, and it's really awesome. You guys have been around for 5 years, so kudos to Ben and Danielle. It's really, really cool. So now I'm going to talk about Bitter and Esters and the stuff that's happening there, 700 Washington Avenue, bitterandesters.com. Besides our usual beginning and advanced classes, we have some great stuff happening at Bitter and Esters in October, and here's some of them. On Saturday, October 25th at 4 p.m., our friend Tamara Connolly will be teaching the business of branding your brew. This is a class aimed at those who are in the beginning stages of writing a business plan for their brewery and are looking for guidance on naming, branding, and designing. Tamara's the one who designed Bitter and Esther's awesome logo, and it's going to be a really great class, so go to our website for more info on that. Then on the next day, which is Sunday, October 26th, starting at 10 a.m., our friends from Proper Cider and Aaron Burr Cider are hosting a community apple press day from 10 a.m. to 6. Joy and Jeremy from Proper Cider are bringing their grinder and press and will be making their cider at the store. It's going to be a sticky day. Come by and see how they do it. Ask questions and taste some samples. Also, when they are done grinding and pressing their apples, a limited amount of people will get to have their apples ground and pressed as well. So if you want to have some fresh cider ground and pressed, come to Bitter and Esther's. It's a one bushel minimum, which is 42 pounds. And you must sign up for a slot because there is a limited amount of space available. So go to bitterandesters.com for the sign-up sheet and for more info on that. Last but not least, so much happening, but this is numero uno. Wait for it. Charlie Papazian is coming to New York City. The man whose book, The Complete Joy of Home Brewing, taught me how to brew, and a lot of you will be signing copies of the latest edition of Joy of Home Brewing and the Homebrewer's Companion. He's going to be two places at the end of October. The first one on Tuesday, October 28th. He will be at 508 Gastro Brewery, where our good friend Chris Kuzme is the head brewer. He's going to be there at, I think, 6:30 or 7 o'clock, and he'll be signing books there. So that's October 28th at 508. It's always a good time there, so you should definitely check that out. And the next day, Wednesday, October 29th, he's going to, at 7 p.m., he's going to be at Bitter and Esther's, and he'll be signing books there and meeting homebrewers and talking, giving a Q&A as part of our monthly beer swap. We do a beer swap where homebrewers bring beer and taste each other's beer and just talk beer and drink beer. And so we move this beer swap back a week, or I guess forward a week, to the last Wednesday of October, which is October 29th. So come on down, show New York City homebrew love to the man who started it all. He started the American Homebrew Association, the Great American Beer Festival. He wrote The Complete Joy of Homebrewing. So it's going to be so incredible. Remember, that's October 29th, 7 o'clock. You don't have to be part of the swap to meet Charlie. You can come and meet Charlie, but it'll be really cool if you have some homebrew and you want to bring it that as well. So again, check bitterandesters.com for more information. Charlie's also going to be a guest on Ferment About It and Beer Sessions when he's in town. So Charlie Papazian, Charlie Papazian, Charlie Papazian. I'm just going to yell that from the roofs. We're very excited. But we have a great show tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about spicing and adding flavors to your homebrew. I get this question a lot in my store. People will come up to me and say, well, I have this exotic Madagascar cockroach spikes or something, and how do I use it in my beer? And my answer almost always is, well, buy a commercial beer, put some of that in there, and see if it tastes right, if it's a style that you want to do. That's really a good way to do it. I mean, spices can be used in a lot of ways, and flavors can be used a lot of ways, and homebrewers are really ingenuitive. They look in their kitchen cabinets and they say, wow, you know what, how can I use this? Besides water, malt, hops, and yeast, how can I use this to change my beers? So my guests tonight all have experience with spicing up their beers beyond their usual flavors. Tonight we have Sean Torres.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Sean. Hollis Smith.
Hey.
Hey. And Robbie Crafton here tonight. And they all have good experience with doing different flavored beers and messing around with beers. So I thought it would be really interesting to talk to them and find out more about it. I'm going to start with Sean, who is the president of Poor Standards Richmond County Homebrew Club.
Yes.
The only homebrew club in Staten Island, which
to
is
our
really
knowledge.
Cool. And you actually have an announcement that you'd like to make about some of the events that you guys do. You guys do awesome events. So
oh, thank
I'd
you
like
very
to hear
much,
about
Sean.
This.
Yeah, so for many of you homebrewers listening, you might already be aware with Brew for Autism, a homebrew fundraiser that we presented in January this year that benefited Autism Speaks. We're planning that again for 2015. Tentatively, that date is January 24th, same Saturday, but the day before. And we just wanted to give homebrewers a heads up that we're interested in maybe participating next year. So
save the date.
Yeah, so we had a lot of help from the local clubs and homebrew shops, like Bitter and Esther's and Brooklyn Homebrew. And, you know, we just wanted to give everybody a heads up. It's going to be a little bit bigger. So, you know, bigger, better, more homebrew, more attendees. We had roughly 300 for the last event, and we raised 9,000 for Autism Speaks.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so hopefully we can beat those numbers.
Well, so where can people get... like if they want to actually pour, or do you have a website or somewhere where they can sign
up? Right now we have brewforautism.com. It hasn't been updated yet because this is all tentative, but within the next few weeks, you should be seeing updates via our website. Probably we'll be reaching out to the local homebrew club, so ask your club leadership about more information. And you can reach out to me personally. My email is seantorres7@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out to me, and I'll answer whatever questions you have.
Wow, that's very cool. You're going to get a lot of girls. I just want to say we're drinking a beer made by my girlfriend, Carla. It's a super ginger beer. That has so much ginger in it that she can't taste it, but I can barely feel my mouth. It's delicious. It's really good. What were you going to say, Sean?
No, I was also going to say that event is a collaboration between both Staten Island clubs, the Homebrew Club Poor Standards, and our craft beer club, who we consider a brother club, Richmond County Beer Club. And it's a great time. So I'm sorry. I just wanted to interject
that. No, that's cool. I love Staten Island. I think you guys are doing great things.
Thank you.
So, and you've been making beer with pumpkins, with figs, with all, yes. and spicing those as well. So tell us about your latest beer. How'd that go about?
Sure. So I brewed a pumpkin beer yesterday, standard pumpkin, just something easy drinking that I could share with family and friends. And that was an 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. brew. Yeah, roasting pumpkin.
I was going to say 3 hours, and I said, no. Hold on a second.
It's just roasting the pumpkin took a while. I roasted 4 different pumpkins and mashing them by hand. Then I brewed a local makerspace on Staten Island. So driving there, transporting everything, cleaning the fermenters, prepping the brew. But it was fun, and it was easy, and it was smooth. But yeah, I brewed with both pumpkin and pumpkin spices that I added to the boil, and it smelled amazing. It smelled like pumpkin pie by the time I pitched the yeast. So
that's the time of year for that.
Yes.
Everything pumpkin.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm beginning to really like the beers. What do you think about pumpkin using the spices or just without the pumpkin or with the pumpkin? Do you notice a big difference?
I do, and I like them all. I mean, you know, it adds contrast when you drink different pumpkin beers that were brewed in different ways. I just boiled the pumpkin yesterday. I didn't add it to the mash. A lot of you homebrewers probably already had nightmare stories with brewing with pumpkin in the mash. A member of Poor Standards actually boiled the pumpkin and retained a lot of pumpkin flavor. So
you just boiled?
Yeah, just
I've
boiled
mashed with pumpkin too, and it's really difficult to lauder is the problem.
Lots
it's really
and
stuck.
Lots of rice hulls.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of rice hulls.
Yeah, it really challenges the headspace of your mash.
I didn't introduce you, Robert. Robert Sherrill's my co-host today.
Hi, John.
Yeah, thanks. This is my first solo flight on Ferment About It, and so sorry about that. I had your name written down, too. I forgot.
Tell us about the fig beer. You did a fig double?
Sure. I did a fig double last week. I usually do that annually, and I change up the recipe just to kind of play with it and see what I can achieve differently. So with the fig double, and I'll make it quick because I know we're short on time, I roast the figs at 270 for about 2.5 hours, 3 pounds of them for 10 gallons. So if you're doing 5 gallons, just half it, 1.5 pounds. And after roasting it, for that amount of time, I mash them by hand, lay them flat in a sheet, and then broil it for 15 minutes. That caramelizes the fig so that it retains a lot of the fig flavor. I add that to the boil at flame out and let it recirculate for 15 minutes, which retained and pulled a lot of that fig flavor. And in the middle of all that, I did a 2.5 hour boil for the fig beer. And
yikes.
Yeah, and a 90-minute mash. So it was a long day also for the fig beer. But
you just don't like to make simple beers.
Not anymore. Yeah, I mean, sometimes, but,
Any spices added to that with the figs? Are there any other ingredients besides the figs?
The D90 and D120 syrup.
So, yeah, candy syrup.
Yeah. So, that is just figs and syrup. And with the pumpkin beers, I used pumpkin spices. I added the spices to the boil, and I actually have some pumpkin tincture or pumpkin spice tinctures that I'm preparing just in case I need to make some adjustments.
So how do you make the tinctures?
The tinctures, I just use 200 milliliters of vodka per tincture and half an ounce of each spice. So half an ounce of nutmeg, 200 milliliters of vodka in its own separate jar, seal it. Well, grind the spice also. I forgot to mention that.
Right, sure, of course.
Yeah, and I use like a coffee grinder for that. Add it all into one jar, throw it in the fridge for about like a month, month and a half, and it pulls a lot of flavor from those spices. So.
A month, month and a half.
Yeah.
And then at bottling time, if you feel that you don't have enough of the spice, you can always add some of the tincture to the beer before you bottle or keg
absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love that about tinctures and any sort of flavoring extract that you could say, you know what? Or you can do half of it. You can say, well, you know, I'm going to do half of it with this and half of it with that. And I'm getting more into the extracts and the things that you can do with that.
And what's great about that is you can pull a little beer if you can, like 4 ounce pour, and just add drops. And if you're adding 4 drops of cinnamon and 1 drop of nutmeg, then you know your ratio is 4 to 1.
Right.
And you can just take it from there.
So. And you could also just buy a pale ale and say, you know what, I'm going to make this a pumpkin spice pale ale.
And fool everyone.
And just fool everyone. Here, try this. So that's cool. Any bad experiences with any flavors or spicings?
You know what?
Cautionary tale?
Yeah, with the figs, I know I added fresh figs into the fermenter once, and it was fermented out, retained very little flavor, and made the beer very hot. Also, not really so much spice, but for my pumpkin beer last year when I was fermenting it in my firm chamber, I left the probe outside of the fridge, which dropped the temperatures below 65, which I was struggling for, but the temperature probe kept reading room temps, and I actually froze my pumpkin beer.
So. Oh, nice.
I did that a few months ago.
Yeah.
Nothing like frozen beer. But how was it after you thawed it?
It wasn't too bad. The tincture saved it for the most part.
It did.
So, I mean, whatever, you know, didn't ferment properly because it was doing a fermentation process, I just popped in some tinctures and it's a pumpkin spice beer. That's what I'm going for.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, the 15% from the vodka. Yeah, no, that was intended.
You could always allow it to just thaw a little bit and take a couple ounces off of there and make basically pumpkin whiskey, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oops, I think it might be illegal. So
next
sorry.
Time. Oh, no, I won't do that. No.
So, all right, well, coming up after the break, I'm going to be talking to Hollis and to Robbie about their plans. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Very interesting. And remember to check out Pour Standards and Pour to Restore. Is it pourtorestore.com?
Brew for Autism.
Brew for You guys do so many things.
That's another event.
So many events.
Listen, it's a lot going on. But yeah, brewforautism.com.
All right, awesome. So you're listening to Foment About It. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we're back, and you're listening to
Ferment About It
on heritageradionetwork.org. And we're talking about spicing and adding weird stuff to your beer for flavors. It's a fun thing to do. You know, we're homebrewers and we want to say, hey, I've got this. I'm gonna throw it into my beer and see if it works. It's only 5 gallons and it's not going to cost me that much money. It's not like 30 barrels, right? So we've been just talking with Sean Torres from the Pour Standards Richmond County Homebrew Club. And now we have Hollis Smith and Robbie Crafton to talk to. So Hollis, we're going to start with you. We're tasting something really delicious that you made. Mm-hmm. This is a
butternut squash beer.
Butternut squash.
Yeah, and the base of the beer is a really, really dark English brown ale. So I'd say very autumn appropriate.
Very autumn appropriate. It's really delicious. And tell me a little bit something about yourself, Hollis. How long have you been brewing?
Not very long. My parents were brewing when I was a kid. I remember bottling beers when I was 10 and being like, this sucks. But really...
Something to learn when you're 10.
Yeah, I was being helpful. But honestly, when I first walked into Bitter and Esther's this past winter, I'd brewed 2 beers by myself.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I'm pretty beginner still.
Well, you make great stuff.
Oh, thank you.
And you were telling me before when we were eating pizza here mm-hmm. at lovely Roberta's that you work at Good Eggs.
Yes, and this is pretty key to the last few beers I've been brewing. Good Eggs is basically like an online farmer's market. We deliver local foods, which are really delicious, and so I have access to some really, really fresh ingredients for my beers.
That's really cool. And like... do you see things coming through that you're like, gotta try that?
Yeah, and of course it's seasonal because we do local stuff. I only have access to things that are, basically fresh and grown around here. So the butternut squash for this, I got that from work, as well as I'm also pouring a rosemary beet saison, and the beets and the rosemary from Rogowski Farm, which is upstate in New York.
Oh, nice. Now, let's start with the butternut squash. Mm-hmm. When did you add the butternut squash?
Oh, we added it. I actually, this is
and
a
And who'd you brew this with?
I brewed this with our good friend Zavi, and we added the butternut squash a couple times. We added it to the mash, but we put it in like a hot bag, like a linen bag, and then we also added it to the boil. We were going to add it to secondary as well, but we tasted it when we were moving it over into secondary and decided, we're good. This is perfect. Don't want to mess with a good thing.
Enough.
Yeah.
And what about any spices that you added to it?
We added, allspice, cardamom, cinnamon. There was a whole lot of spices that we added to this, and we did that in the boil as well.
Towards the end?
Yeah. One other really neat trick, which actually Robbie here tipped us off to, was we took the seeds from the butternut squash and roasted those as well.
Oh, wow.
And threw those in. And that's where you get sort of a little bit of an extra nutty flavor
to
it.
Threw them in the mash or the boil?
That was in the boil.
I guess you could do that with pumpkin, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you done that, Sean?
No, I haven't, but I've heard of other homebrewers actually suggesting it yesterday. I just didn't have time to.
I think it'd be interesting to toast those and put them into secondary.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Or just eat them.
Yeah. I ate a few.
You did eat a few.
We had a lot of butternut squash left over. I brought home like 4 of them, which was a lot more than the, between 2 and 3 pounds that we actually ended up using. So we're just brewing and eating and brewing and hoping a pie would be made by someone.
I'm surprised Evie didn't do it.
Yeah, I know. We're like, Evie, where's the pie? Come on.
Zombie's wife.
Yeah.
Also, tell us about the beet beer. It's blood red. It's an amazingly red beer.
This one, I made this. The base is a saison. So, Pilsner, put a little bit of wheat in there too for some head retention. I don't know if I'm really getting it. But I more just had my day off and I thought, hey, I want to make a really crazy, bloody looking beer. And it was summer. So I thought, saison's good. My apartment gets really hot. I have no temperature control. The yeast can handle this. and I got some rosemary in there as well. And I ended up, I tell people when I give it to them, it's kind of like a juice cleanse. It's very, very beety.
That'll get you drunk?
Yeah. It's pretty light. It's a saison. It's probably about 4% alcohol. So it's light, light, light.
And you use the beets?
I use those at the end of the boil.
Did you juice them first?
Yeah, as best I could. I got a blender and put about 3 pounds of beets for this 5-gallon batch in a blender and mushed them up. and threw them in at the end of the boil. It was hard straining them all out, but it's worth it. It looks really, really cool.
It does look really cool. And the rosemary, that's in the boil too?
Mm-hmm. Yep, end of the boil.
Right. And when we were talking earlier, I said to all three of you, you know, is there any bad things, any times when you shouldn't have used spices or flavors, and everyone just started talking at once. Oh my God, yeah. Everything sucks. So
it's easy to go overboard. You take one thing and you're like, oh, this is so delicious. I'm going to put way too much of this in here. I wanted to do like a blood orange cinnamon pale ale once, and I thought, oh, pale ale, no big deal. You know, it's like a blank slate. Just going to throw some blood orange and cinnamon in there. I couldn't find blood orange because it was the wrong season, so I found this other sort of pinky looking orange, and that was a mess juicing those. That was a mess. And then I added way too much cinnamon. I'd done it in a tincture. I thought, oh, this would be an easy way to do it. I'm not going to worry about, I don't know, contamination from cinnamon, you know, going through it. I don't have to boil anything, nothing. I put way too much in. My boyfriend sort of lovingly called it. He was like, oh, it's kind of like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that could sell.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch beer. And I was like, this is disgusting.
What did you do with it?
Well, I brought it to the Bitter Nester homebrew.
The swap?
Swap on Wednesday. And a few people were like, do you mind if I just don't finish this sample? And I was like, it's okay. It's okay. I dumped it.
So
I dumped
polite. It. Do you mind if I put some milk in this?
Exactly. So that didn't go too well.
It was a fail, but...
Yeah.
But so, you know, that's the whole idea of doing these sort of things, to try.
Yeah.
You have to try these things and say, you know, if someone didn't say, what's this mold, we wouldn't have penicillin, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and measure. Always measure everything you do and take really good notes.
Write
because
it down.
I used way too much cinnamon in that, and obviously, you know, you learn to scale things back. It's easy to get carried away.
So, all right. So, Robbie, how are you today, Mr. Crafton?
I'm good.
So, you are currently working for Greenpoint Beer Works.
Yes.
Over in, is that considered Fort Greene?
It's Clinton Hill.
Clinton Hill. And they are the makers of Kelso and Heartland Brew, amongst others. So, you have been around the block. You've worked for another brewery for a little while, Big Alice. And you at Big Alice, you made some pretty interesting different styles of beer. So, and you're a home brewer as well. How long have you been brewing?
Oh, I've lost track now. It's not so long. I'm not good at keeping track of that.
I'm a vampire. It's been since the 1700s.
I'd say maybe 6 years.
And do you like to brew with alternate flavors? Do you like to add things?
I do. At Big Alice, I made about 130 different recipes in a year, almost all of which use some kind of non-traditional ingredient.
And that was 10-gallon batches, right?
It was.
So they were all nice little batches. What was the most non-traditional ingredient you would say you use? Gotcha on that one.
Eye
of Newt.
Human flesh.
What's the best human flesh? I've had that. That's pretty good. What was the best homebrew, whatever, beer that you've ever made? What was the best one that used some sort of non-water malt hops yeast? What would you say you just absolutely loved to use?
I think one of the best beers I ever made was one with bacteria that I had made it when I went home to visit my parents for Christmas, and I did a series of four different beers, basically two batches that I then split in half, and I put different bacterias and or sugar additions in each of the carboys, and then I let them ferment for a year, and then when I came back for the holidays the next year, we bottled them up, and they turned out really well. I mean, it's not often that you have the time and space and in New York City a basement to take advantage of, so I was like, well, I'm home for the holidays. I might as well.
Might as well brew beer.
Yeah.
What have you made lately? Anything?
Well, we've got something
right
here.
What are we drinking right here?
Yeah, what are we drinking?
So that's another Zavi collaboration.
Everyone.
And Zavi's in Colorado. Yeah, Zavi couldn't come to the show. He's like, I'm going to be in Colorado. We miss you, Zavi.
That's a brown.
Love you, Evie.
So what is that?
It's a brown saison with cardamom.
Cardamom. And whose idea was it to put cardamom in that?
I think it might have been mine.
Yeah.
He had like a base saison recipe that he had just done some other spices with that turned out really well. So we wanted to do a version that was a little darker with some little different spices in it for the fall.
Nice. And do you have any advice as far as, since you've brewed so much beer and so many different things, any advice to a home brewers looking to up their game by just adding some sort of other flavor? What would you say? Like,
yeah, I'm personally not a big fan of adding things to secondary or adding alcohol to the beers. Like, it works great, but I was coming,
tincture?
Yeah, like I was coming from it from a perspective of someday I'd like to do this professionally and have done it professionally and maybe would want to do it again. And so as a professional brewer, you can't add alcohol to your beers.
Right.
And at Big Alice, we were like a really small setup and we couldn't really, you know, it wasn't a full-time thing. So we weren't there every day. We couldn't really babysit the beers to that level. So it just worked out that we were putting all of everything pretty much at the end of the boil. And certain things work better than others for that, but a lot of things work really well that way. So
just end of the boil.
Yeah, get it in at the end of the boil with your last hop addition, which is, you know, your flavor aroma additions. You know, that's where you're going to get all that stuff from. And most of that stuff's not going to ferment out. So right. You get it in, you get it in the fermenter, it's sealed. You don't have to open it back up and, you know, you know that it's good. You can kind of come back and taste it later. You're not adding anything extra to the beer. It's all in the brewing process, and it's done at the end of the day.
I think a question a lot of people will ask is, how do I know how much, especially when you're putting it at the end of the boil? Because at that point, it's yay or nay.
Yeah, so that's where it gets a little bit harder.
As Hollis told us before.
So I think people sometimes who see me at the store think I'm crazy because I have a habit of holding up in the air like various bunches of random herbs or vegetables or spices. And what I'm doing is I'm imagining what that's going to taste like in 5 gallons of water. So that's like one angle to it. Just basically thinking, well, like, okay, I'm going to dilute this to X point and it's going to be beer, which is going to have more flavor than water. So I want to do a little bit more. But basically, there's a couple of books that I look at pretty regularly. One is from Dogfish Head. They have kind of a series of different spices that they've used at their brew pub, Extreme Brewing.
Right. Great book.
And so it's just like one page that basically has a list of spices, how much they added, where they added them in the boil. Beercraft is another good book from a couple of homebrewers from Brooklyn. And so if they have like some concrete published information, I'll start with that. If not, then I'll go to the internet and I'll start to look up other people's recipes and what they've done, the forums. And you can usually, like, if you just Google, like, you know, garam masala beer or whatever, normally you'll get some kind of hit of somebody
sure.
who did something. And they'll either say, like, oh, I used this amount and it was good or not. And so between, like, just kind of visualizing it and what the books say and what you find on the internet, usually you can narrow it down to a point where you have like a pretty good educated guess of how much you should start with. Obviously, if you use too much, then you're stuck in a situation where you may have to like brew another beer and blend them.
It. Right, sure.
And if you've got too little, you know, that's okay. You could always make it again and add a little bit more.
Do you find cooking, the act of cooking with a spice or an herb, gives you an idea too when you say, oh, well, I like the way cilantro tastes in this. I wonder how it will be in my beer. Or...
I used cilantro once in a beer, and it did totally ferment out. That was one of the few things
it
that
fermented
I completely lost. Yeah, it was
well,
gone.
Wow. That might not have been such a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to mention that every brewer tonight has brought a recipe that we're going to feature on the Facebook page tomorrow, Ferment About It, Facebook.com/Ferment About It. And we will feature recipes. And Sean, what's yours?
Just the pumpkin beer that I brewed yesterday.
Pumpkin?
Yeah.
All right. And Hollis?
I've got the butternut squash.
Butternut squash one. And what'd you send over?
I sent
Robbie?
Over a guayillo chili ale. And that was actually served at Blocktoberfest. It was one that I'd made while I was still at Big Alice. So
oh,
if
cool.
anybody tried it there, that's the a version of the
oh,
recipe
great.
For a home brewer.
Wow. So you all can check that out tomorrow. I will physically put those on to Facebook and you can try it. I'd like to thank the three of you, Sean, Hollis and Robbie for coming. Thank you very much, Robert, for co-hosting with
me. Happy to be here.
I'm very happy to have you, and I'd like to thank Michelle and Carla for being in here and sweating with us. Just want to thank everyone for listening, and foment about it.
Foment about it!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.